Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show, where we discuss the issues of the day with a panel of invited guests. Live in the studio, we have Michael Senger and Gray Salt, and live on the Rhine from Miami, we have Nathan Thomas. If you want to get involved with the show, 952-784-4000 is the phone number. We would ask you to turn your radios down when you call us, because otherwise you'll get that delay and feedback. Also, studio@talkradioeurope.com is the email. With a lot of emails in this morning. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are TRE Talk is Good. And the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We're going to move away from Brexit and all things referendum of Scotland for a moment. But we have a caller on the line. I'll just take this one call before we move on to other issues throughout Europe. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
My name is Pat Adams. I'm calling from the Costa Blanca.
Good morning.
Good morning, yes. Now then, I have lived here 41 years, right?
Yes.
When I first came here, I had to have private health insurance for myself and my children. But in those days, I was young, and the premiums were not very high. But now, if it does happen that we've got to have private health insurance, it's going to cost me an arm and a leg, and I'm a pensioner. And I believe they're treating us like children, and they're just bouncing us around like a football.
Pat, thanks for that call. Yes. Thanks for the call in there. I pity the man who would try and bounce you around like a football, but thank you for your call in. 952-784-4000, the phone number. We're going to move on from that, from the issues of Spain. We're looking at Europe and specifically Turkey ahead of the Dutch elections. It has been a tumultuous couple of days in the relationship between Turkey and the EU. The Turkish Foreign Ministry has rejected a call by top EU officials to show restraint in a row with the Netherlands over political campaigning. It described as worthless an appeal by EU Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini and EU Enlargement Commissioner Johannes Hahn. The row erupted after the Dutch barred Turkish ministers from campaigning amongst expatriates for a referendum. The referendum would controversially boost the Turkish president's powers. In a response to the Dutch move, Turkey has barred the Dutch ambassador from returning to Ankara and suspended high-level political Turks whilst accusing the Dutch of using Nazi tactics. Nathan, your thoughts on this developing, escalating row between what seems to be Europe and Turkey?
It's a very interesting situation. I think one of the things it shows is how politics throughout the world has gotten to be nastier and nastier over the past year or so, and I partially blame that on Donald Trump and the way he has dealt with a political system, and the way he acts, has become acceptable, and he won the election, and so a lot of other people are being way out front and way nastier than I think politicians anywhere have ever been. I mean, the name calling and everything else. I think it's a very sad thing, but it is what we are stuck with at this point. The whole problem here seems to be something that is an unusual situation where Erdogan's government people are campaigning in other countries that have large Turkish populations because they can vote in this referendum, so they're looking for the votes. But they are causing security problems in these countries, and they say, why should we pay for security, for political rallies, for Turks and for Turkey? Because it really doesn't have anything to do with us, so we don't want to do that. So the only way to do it is not have the rallies in our countries and not have the people campaigning one way or the other for the Turkish referendum to be holding rallies in the Netherlands and in I think there was another country that had the same problem with it. I forget.
Germany, perhaps?
Yes. I think it was Germany, but because they have a large Turkish population. And as somebody said, if you took all the Turkish voters in Germany or the people who are allowed to vote in Turkey in Germany, it would be the third largest city or fourth largest city in Turkey, which means there's a lot there. So if you're campaigning for something, you would want to reach those voters. But how you do it, and you know, is it's a new politics, and people are trying things that hasn't been done before. And it doesn't always work.
I mean, you're saying that you're blaming Donald Trump, which I think is a little harsh on Erdogan's behavior, because I mean, he has been autocratic from since well before Donald Trump was elected 45th president of the United States.
He has, but it's the name calling. It's the idea that this is Nazi policies from Holland or from Germany and so on and things like that that. We haven't seen that much of it. And I'm not blaming Trump. I'm just saying that his attitude, which is different from most politicians, I think most people would agree, has been much more in your face. And he was successful with it. And I think other people are trying to do the same thing in whatever political world they are in. And it's making politics a lot nastier.
The return or the emergence of nasty politics. Michael, your thoughts on this one?
This is something which has been disturbing me from everything, all the political things that are going on at the moment. It seems to have taken a different swing from what I would call normal politics, doing things for your country. It's become a policy of fear, very right wing. So that you've got people saying, we want America to be great again. We want Britain to be back how it was. We want all these things. And the people that are spoiling this are the immigrants and foreigners. And I don't like it. And it is become, and I keep hearing, the word Nazi coming into these elections all the time. I mean, there's 400,000 Turks living in the Netherlands. I mean, that is a lot of people, and you get those sort of rallies going on, and they become like bad political rallies where people are, looking for becoming very right wing. It's very, very disturbing for people of my age who thought we'd gone past all this.
Mm, great,
yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think Erdogan, he's got a trump card. He's got the Greece thing. The EU have not stuck to their side of the bargain where they're supposed to have done with regards to the immigrants from Syria and from Iraq. And now he's taking his opportunity to wind it on. And I don't think that any rally from a foreign country should be allowed. I mean, Cameron came over here, didn't he? Went to Gibraltar to campaign during Brexit.
Yeah, but Gibraltar's not a foreign country.
That's
Gibraltar's,
right.
But, that would be like Rajoy going to Theodore Melia.
But that was like sort of selling sand to the Arabs. He didn't need to do it. I mean, they were hardly going to vote to leave, were they? So it was kind of a wasted flight, really, other than to maybe get a bit of a suntan going. But you couldn't see, Boris marching down San Pedro Boulevard with his Union Jack flying and a political rally here. Why would Holland allow Turkey to do the same thing? And I think they're right to do that. Since the coup, Erdogan seems like he's flexing his muscles, and I think he's flexed a little bit too far, because the European democratic systems will not allow that kind of behaviour to occur.
I mean, but he's accusing Merkel of hiding terrorists in the country. I mean, why would she be where does that come from? Why would she be hiding terrorists? I mean, the fact is that Turkey's probably letting in through its borders more people coming from these different countries, Syria, etc., and using that as a conduit to get into Europe.
I mean, you've raised a good point there, because Turkish officials have also suggested reconsidering the deal that we have, that the EU has with Turkey, in relation to the flow of migrants, mainly Turkey's efforts to prevent them crossing by land to Greece and Bulgaria. Nathan, do you think we could see Turkey say, well, we don't like what's happening now, you don't like being slapped on the wrists by the EU, so we're going to open up the borders and let anybody who wants to come across into Europe go across?
It's certainly possible. That is a club that Erdogan has, because that was, what was it, a year and a half, 2 years ago, that was the main refugee route, and the EU did a deal with Turkey. Now, I don't know the details of how that deal is working, whether both sides are happy with it or not. If it is working, and there seems to be a lot fewer people coming across that way. I don't know whether it would hurt Turkey more to get rid of that deal or not. But yes, that's something he could use if he felt it would be in his interest to do it.
And I mean, the thing is, you've got to ask yourself here, though, but Turkey has been trying, or we thought that Turkey was trying to become part of Europe for the best part of a decade, maybe two decades now. Now, if you're running around as the president or the prime minister of Turkey saying, quote unquote, I have said that I thought that Nazism was over, but I was wrong. Netherlands is a banana republic and that countries in the West have Islamophobia. You're hardly doing yourself a lot of favors in terms of wanting to become part of the European club, Gray.
No, I mean, Erdogan's an absolute loon. And if he thinks that the Brits, the Europeans, anybody else is going to allow them to campaign on European soil when his human rights record since the coup has been absolutely appalling, he's just locked people up without trial, and he's trying to reinstate the death sentence, then he's got another thing coming, because their policy on human rights is so far removed to what we see as the norm that the chances of them ever becoming assimilated within the European Union are virtually nil. And I think that we shouldn't even have them as, like, they're almost like an associate member at the minute. That's because that can't be allowed to happen at the minute with their European rights record. It'd be almost like allowing Saudi Arabia to do the same thing. Yeah, we do a lot of trade with Saudi Arabia. You know, we're guilty of that. The Americans are guilty of that. But we would not allow them to start campaigning in the streets when their human rights record is so appalling and the way they treat their own people is so bad.
Michael?
But Merkel's already said that she supports the Dutch with their policy of not allowing these rallies, and that's upsetting the Turks even more. So yeah, I can't actually see them being let into Europe with open arms, especially who I think, like the governor of Europe, like Merkel, is so against them in the first place.
Nathan, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think Erdogan has given up on being part of the EU in any near future idea, but I think what he's trying to do is consolidate his power, and that's what this referendum is about. And if he can get votes from Turkish expats in Germany or in Holland, he wants those votes. That's the most important thing to him right now, is you know, upping his amount of power, not getting into the EU.
Indeed. I mean, also, I mean, this is the other thing this is going to do, obviously, is as well as he's trying to get his power base going, does this sort of campaign, these sort of statements coming out of Turkey, coming out of Ankara, play into the hands? Tomorrow we go, Holland goes to the polls tomorrow. You know, Wilders is leading on a populist campaign, almost saying Holland first. Is this playing into his hands, Nathan?
It could be. I don't really know. It's you can react as a Dutch person saying, well, they're not going to allow the rallies, so that's good. And I mean, that's not Wilders, but the idea of, you know, someone else coming in and doing things in Holland is, you know, and preventing all of that is kind of a right wing common thing. We do it our way and the rest of you stay out. But the government of the day, which is not the right wing government, you know, is stopping these rallies. So I don't know how much use he can get out of it other than the general idea that, Holland for the Dutch.
I mean, the Dutch Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, and excuse me if I get my pronunciation wrong there, has warned the country not to, succumb to a domino effect of populism that is linked to Brexit and the Trump election. On a debate yesterday with Geert Wilders, he said that we shouldn't go to a domino effect. Wilders has promised to take the Netherlands out of the EU, close all mosques and ban the Koran. Some opinion polls suggest his Freedom Party could win the most seats. Michael, worrying developments?
To reiterate what I said before, the whole thing has become scary. I mean, you've got these what I'm going to call them neo-Nazi parties becoming the premium party. The people that they seem to be getting the most cover in the newspapers, maybe because of their ways of their telling people that what they're going to do, they're going to ban this, they're going to ban that, they're going to ban immigrants. We've got the same thing going on with France, with Penn, and her father before. It is, for me, very, very scary times. I don't actually think that they will... that there's enough votes for him to get him to be the president. But just the fact that he's getting so much front page news is, for me, very, very upsetting and scary.
Great.
I think the rise of the far... And I'm going to call it the far right. It is the far right. You know, it's a sheep, you know, dressed in a cardigan. It's still the far right. And the rise of the far right is frightening throughout Europe. When everything was going on with Brexit, I was talking to a lot of people who've lived over here for a lot of years and not lived in the UK. And the rhetoric that they were talking about, they were using words that I've not heard for 30 years. And that's frightening. And my daughter is back in the UK at the moment studying, and she doesn't care where you're from, who you are, and all of her peers, that age group. They don't care which country somebody's from. They don't care what colour skin somebody is. All they care about is whether they're a decent person or not. And I think the rest of us, the population, can learn from that. And if we've learnt nothing from what happened before the Second World War, which obviously, you know, a lot of people haven't, I find it incredible that the far right is starting to not just wean its way back in, but to become the mainstay of European politics and, in a lot of ways, world politics.
I mean, the worrying thing is, well, not worrying, but there's 28 parties who make up the coalition in Holland, and hopefully I can't see that they're going to work in conjunction with this guy. I mean, he looks like a Nazi to me. He's got that Aryan... I'm sorry, I shouldn't be saying, but he's got... No, the way he talks, the way he conducts himself, that's... I don't mean he's what clothes he wears.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, to me, he's got that arrogant rhetoric.
The hate.
He's got that hate. When he talks about things, it comes across with hate. And I just don't like that. It just, for me, it's... That's not... Selling fear to people is not how to run a country.
But you see that fear has been perhaps one of the defining facts of the past couple of years in politics throughout Europe. That
yes.
Fear of the other, that fear of the new person or the immigrant.
But not only in Europe, it's. I mean, you know, it's bigly going on in America.
The thing is now that, you know, I noticed when I was in America, and we were talking about this briefly during the break, that when I was over there just before the vote for Trump. And, I mean, obviously Nathan will know a massive amount more than this, but I was in California, Nathan, and I was talking to taxi drivers, to Uber people, to people at the hotel, and I was saying, you know, which way is it going to go? And it was almost like, oh, it's the worst, you know, which one are you going to vote, the worse or the worser? But when I questioned them deeper and said about Trump, none of them said, yeah, we're going to vote for Trump. But you just got that feeling where they were actually going to vote for Trump. Nobody was saying, we're going to vote for Hillary. Politics now is almost like everybody knows in their head that what the right-wing politicians, far right, I'm not talking about mainstream, like the Conservatives, what they propagate is wrong. But they'll go to the ballot box, they'll hold the nose, and they'll stick a vote in that box because built into their DNA is a level of racism which the majority of us or some of us don't understand. And that is the reason that these people are now getting so big throughout Europe and other parts of the world.
Nate, sorry, just going to go to Nathan over there. It's Nathan, your thoughts on that, on Gray's comments?
I think he's entirely right. There is, and it doesn't matter what country you're in, people are afraid. And people are not getting what they have expected. Nobody is progressing economically and everything the way they have for the past 20 years. It's slowed down all over the world. People are feeling that their government, whatever it is not doing what they hoped it would. They are not in the position that they hoped they would be at this point. And they don't know why, but the easy target is the outsider. And it doesn't matter what country you're in, but the other guy, the people who aren't one of us, whoever we are, is the problem. And this is something that the right wing plays on and has become, you know, a major issue in almost every election, whether it really should be or not. It has been because people are afraid, and that's what they're afraid of.
Michael?
I mean, one of the things which has always been happening is if you go far enough right, you're going to finish up meeting the far enough left, and then you've got this crazy situation that can happen. So, you know, it has to be some moderation has to come in so that that people can start thinking straight again. And I go back to the same thing, stop peddling fear. I mean, you know, okay, to talk about Donald Trump again, he's going every day. He gets onto Twitter and makes up a story, and that becomes the truth.
We underestimate these people. We completely underestimate them. If you look at social media now, you've got the EDL, Britain First. Britain First put these lovely, fluffy little posts out with puppy dogs on, with Union Jack balaclavas on and stuff like that. And people share these posts, right? And they think, a lot of them think it's innocuous, this post innocuous, you know, about a little bulldog in his jacket or whatever. But, you know, when you look at the root of it, what it does is it puts it in young people's psyche that this is what we're all about. And they're geniuses at it because they have this machine behind them that allows them to propagate hate and that feeling of not liking the outsider. And that is the problem that we've got. Social media is brilliant. I use it every day. We all use it. But also it has a very dark side. And the dark side is people like Britain First, the EDL, propagating rubbish. I was going to say basura. Propagating rubbish against young and sort of malleable people.
We've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. Raymond from Mallorca.
Yes, Raymond.
Right, good. Okay, where shall I start? Well, this thing about fear of the unknown, that hits the nail on the head. That's a fact. Racism, well, I don't think... obviously, there are some racists about. There's no doubt about that. Some people are racist. And I'm afraid this goes both ways. It's not just Europeans who are racist or Americans. It's also the people they're against, I'm afraid. Now, what it is, in my opinion, is... this could work, this living different cultures, living alongside each other in parallel societies. They are parallel because there's no integration. It can work providing the numbers are, not large numbers. Then the people of the country don't feel threatened by a foreign culture that doesn't wish to integrate. There's just two totally different ideas. It's two different ways of looking at two different types of civilization, behavior, the whole thing. You know, it works. It works in the country they come from because that's their system, that's their way. But it doesn't work that well in Europe, and I'm afraid that's the problem. It's people who are now, I suppose there's an element of fear here. People are frightened. And you've got people sitting on the fence, like, let's say, Holland tomorrow, yes? They're sitting on the fence, and the Turkish president has not helped by calling the Dutch Nazis, by starting to break off diplomatic ties, doing the same with the Germans. For the undecided, reasonable people, they think, these people are hostile and they don't like us. Right, we'll vote far right. And I think that's what it is. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for that point, Raymond. Nathan, any thoughts on Raymond's comments?
Yeah, no, I think he's right. And, I mean, it is very simple. Fear sells. And people who are willing to use that, it's not necessarily very nice, but if they can scare you into thinking they can make things better for you and do it through fear, some people, some parties, some, you know, whatever groups you want to talk about will use that. And that is what's happening. And people are learning more and more that fear does sell. And it's, you know, whether it's racist, it's not necessarily race, it's just the other guy, somebody who is not one of us, however you identify us. It's not necessarily race or religion or political party or anything else. It's just the outsider, the stranger is bad. And as he said, if the numbers are small of the strangers in any one place, it's not that big a problem. But what we are having over the past 10, 15 years, because of technology, because of transportation and so on, more and more people are able to move from one place to another. And if they're not happy where they are, they move someplace else. And the numbers are large. And you're seeing more and more places where political ideas, where the country is divided. The U.S. is now divided. The election and the whole thing now is very, very close. The U.K. with the referendum, it was very, very close. So you are not getting where 80 or 85% of the people want one thing and there's a few that want something else. You are getting 48 and 52 one way or the other. And this is when it's a problem, because it is not one side dominates. It is two very close, as far as numbers are concerned, sides opposed to each other, and nobody wants to give up.
Right, okay. I'm just looking at some breaking news here from Associated Press. It says, the latest on the tensions between Turkey and Western Europe, the mayor of Rotterdam says specialized armed security forces he sent to a standoff with a Turkish minister on Saturday night had permission to open fire if necessary. Speaking late on Monday on a television show, Mayor Ahmed Abutaleb, said he sent the special armed intervention unit to the Turkish consulate amid fears that a 12-man security detail that had driven to the Netherlands from Germany with Turkish Family Affairs Minister Fatma Betül Sayan Kaya could be armed. He said that it was important to be sure that if it came to a confrontation, we would be the boss, and the unit had been given permission to shoot. The Turkish minister was eventually escorted out of the Netherlands, and in the early hours of Sunday earlier, the Dutch had also refused Turkey's foreign minister permission to visit. Both ministers wanted to address rallies about next month's constitutional reform referendum. I mean, if there had been shooting between Turkish visiting Turkish diplomats and Dutch security forces, Nathan, the consequences of that could have been horrendous.
Of course it could. And the reality is, this didn't happen. Why he is even announcing that after the fact that they had the orders or the whatever you want to call it, the ability to open fire if necessary. I mean, once you get into a police action anywhere, I mean, that is kind of understood, but it's understood by both sides. And generally, things like that don't happen. Why he would, as I say, after the fact, make that an issue, I don't know.
Right. We've got a caller on, and thank you for holding, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Morning. Just been listening with interest of all this talk about far right.
Yeah.
I've mentioned before that I think we all are in the middle somewhere. None of us are really right or really left unless you go to the far extremes, and there's no extremes out there. People could talk about peddling fear and Nazis and stuff. Like I mentioned before, back at the beginning of 2016, I said there would be a rise of the right, and meaning in right-wing policies. Quite simply, anyone who couldn't see it coming, it fascinates me that they couldn't see it coming, because the world has been run by socialist elites, since the war, pretty much so. And everything's been forced upon people. And every generation or two, every second generation, turns on the other generation. They always look at their grandparents and think, why did they do it like that? And it turns. And we are at a turning point. And I've spoke on this program many times for a long, long time. I believe in the free movement of people. People go to America or go to Europe and they look to make that fulfill their dreams. But the problem we've had for the last few years and with this socialist elite, we've got a capitalist poor and a socialist elite, they have been bombing and destroying and repatriating and moving people around the world. Now, when you have free movement of people and people move for a dream, that's not happening. These people are being forced into countries they don't want to be there. And then when they're there, they're met by fear of people who don't know what's going on. So we have the clash of the two. And the governments are causing it. There's no hatred of people. People don't hate other people. They're not xenophobic. And like your panelist said, my children, my grandchildren, they all know how to get on with people, regardless of religion, colour or sexuality. And it's not that you've got a handful of people that they don't really matter. But there's the forced repatriation of people who go into places that they don't understand. It's not their culture. They don't know what's going on, being met by people who don't understand their culture. Now, if this had happened 30, 40, 50 years ago, someone would have gone there for a dream. They'd have learnt the language. They'd have found a menial task job and moved on up, and they, it would have been something that they dreamt about and wanted to do. The problem we have is people are being moved around the world who don't want to be moved, and they're going to places where people do not understand and can't get a grip of the numbers and what is going on, and it's a completely different what it was. And that's why we have the rise of the so-called right. It's not. It's a kickback against you. Where you get pushed, you get pulled. And because we've been down the left or centralist for so long, we're having a generation that are looking back now and saying, why? Why is this happening? And they're turning against it. And we've got this going to probably go now for the other way for quite some time. That's my opinion anyway.
Peter, thanks for that. Too much to come back on that one, panel.
I won't mind.
Go on then.
I don't think we've been run by a socialist elite at all. I think a lot of the problems with immigration, you can stem back to George Bush, who was nowhere a socialist. So I would argue that that's not factually correct. And I would also like to point out, and I would challenge anybody, that the numbers, we've got a lot of expats that live, or immigrants, or whatever you want to call us, in Spain. I would like to know what percentage of us speak relatively decent Spanish, or any Spanish at all. Because I tend to find the ones who do the most shouting, and I'm not aiming this at is it Peter? Because at all, but I'm saying the ones that the last caller, I'm not aiming it at him because I don't know him at all.
Right.
But the ones who do the most shouting about people not being assimilating with another country, or, you know, not speaking the language, are the ones who live over here, who don't speak the language, who don't have any dealings with the indigenous people, but they think that that's acceptable in Spain, but not acceptable in our country, and that's wrong.
I think where there's some confusion is, and I slightly disagree with you there, which is, I don't speak very good Spanish, but I would never ever try and put my views over a Spanish way. I would never go into a predominantly Catholic country and try and make them change the way they do things. Now, in Spain, that's never going to happen. Now, just throwing it out there, what's happening in England is that you're getting ghettos where, you know, say that, let's say things that are happening in, was it Rotherham, where you've got whole Asian communities.
Or Rochdale.
Rochdale. Yes. Is it Rochdale? Yeah, Rochdale. You've got whole Asian communities which want to change the whole way that Rochdale is run. You know, you can't, the kids can't have assembly in the morning. It offends somebody. They can't wear a cross. They can't celebrate Christmas. They can't do this. And this, I think, is where some people are getting a little bit upset.
Do you know what? I would argue with that and say, I understand where you're coming from, but I would say, is it them that's saying you can't wear a cross? I would say it's not. I would say it's some do-gooder British person who's saying you can't wear a cross because it'll offend the Muslim population. I've never heard any Muslims say you shouldn't be allowed to wear the cross. I've never heard that. I've never heard that said. And I would say, we talk about ghettos and all that. When I was growing up, I grew up in a multicultural part of Nottingham, and we had areas like St Anne's and Radford that were purely West Indian, okay? Yeah. They got on with it.
I think, you know, I think that for the first time that I've ever known is that the immigration situation is, from going back to the first immigrations from when I remember, which was the Jews going into the East End from the docks, and then the West Indians, and then what I call the soft Asians came in, and everybody went, you know, they assimilated very, very easily into the local community and became part of the community. It doesn't seem to be happening now. I don't know for sure, and it seems to me that that's where there seems to be a little bit of a problem.
We've got a caller on the line. Thank you for holding. Good afternoon. Good morning, caller. Excuse me. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Raymond again.
Yes, Raymond.
The gentleman guest you've got there has just spoken. I grew up in Wolverhampton, which is where I'm from, and as a teenager, I started knocking about with Jamaicans. I wasn't the only white guy. There weren't many of us. There was a lot of racism in England in the 1960s. But one thing I discovered was that their culture was so similar, and there was no resentment from them. We were really, really similar, and therefore it was possible for us to integrate and become friends, okay? It works. The only problem is, it's only the last couple of decades, Islam has become very militant. It wasn't the case then. It was not militant. And this militancy and aggression, that's affecting things. That's what it is. So they're doing it. They are creating the situation. It's not just England. It's everywhere. It's Holland, Germany. It's everywhere. Sweden, Denmark. Not Denmark, not so much, but certainly Sweden, Germany, Holland, and other countries where you've got ghettos. And it's not really working. What we don't hear on the British media, and this is no criticism, this is normal, what we don't hear is the constant daily attacks in Germany and Sweden, places like that. Germany's bad. They're attacking young girls in swimming baths. There's so much going on. It's really horrendous. The amount of reported attacks last year in Germany was really, really high. Obviously, it's just a clash of cultures. It's, as I've said, if they were to behave like Hindus or Sikhs or West Indians or Buddhists, we don't have any problems with these people in the UK or other countries. There's no as I said, I grew up in a town with lots of immigrants. I think Enoch Powell was the MP at the time. But we didn't have any problems with Hindus or Sikhs or anything like that. In fact, we got on with them. They're all right. They're nice people. They don't wish to impose their values upon us. That's the point. And this is where Islam has gone wrong.
Raymond, thanks for your call in. Nathan, hard Islam, do you think this is the problem we're getting here again? I mean, we've had this before, having a discussion.
Well, I think what you're dealing with now is numbers. It is, you know, the numbers back in the 60s or wherever you want to go to, the numbers were smaller. And yes, people now all over are more militant. And there are enough of them that they can want to do things their way and have enough people to basically set up a parallel society in whatever country you're talking about. If the numbers, as I said before, are small enough that is not a realistic thing, you have a much better chance of assimilating. And it doesn't matter who it is or what country you're talking about or anything else. Once the numbers get to be big enough and you are more serious about not assimilating and maintaining your own culture, religion, whatever, that's what's happening now, and we are seeing it more and more because the numbers of people who are moving into other places than where they grew up and where their culture is the normal culture, the common culture, they are moving more and more, and that's where the problem is coming from.
We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Charles, Peter again.
Yes, Peter.
Yeah, just your panelist there who tried not to have a go at me but did. But if you'd have listened properly, you do not get further from a racist than myself. And yes, I do speak Spanish. I've been here 13 years on and off, and I speak pretty good Spanish. And I am currently employing some Spanish and some Bulgarian people working on my house. I probably come from the most diverse family you could ever have. I've got one brother married to an Arab, one brother married to a Bulgarian. My two brothers live in America. I've got family in Australia, the ones that live in America, one's in the Cirque du Soleil, which is probably the most diverse company in the world. So, answer to that, he's wrong, completely wrong.
Well, I don't think he said you personally, Peter. I mean, I think it was quite clear on that.
He said, I find that the ones that speak most loudly...
Well, that didn't mean... Anyway, go on.
Former caller, and yeah. He named it. But anyway, that's immaterial. It's his opinion. He's entitled to his opinion.
Peter, the reason I said that was that I'm not talking about Peter because it just felt like I was following on from your call. I don't know anything about you, so I wasn't pointing it. If you thought that, then I'm sorry. It wasn't aimed at you. What I'm saying is the people that I've spoken to over here who were shouting the most about Brexit, etc., I find don't.
Peter, go on, please.
I find exactly the same, and I detest those type of people and avoid them like the plague. And they're normally reading an English newspaper, sat in an English bar, watching an English TV, and like you say, don't speak a word of Spanish. But that's them, and some of them are too old in the tooth. But that's a handful of people. My point was, not the odd one, the massive amount of numbers of people that are being repatriated around the world, and huge amounts of these people do not want to do it. They've been forced to do it. They're fleeing in massive amounts of numbers, fleeing for their lives. And when people say, oh, you moved down to Spain, you're very brave. No, I didn't come across the Mediterranean. I didn't walk thousands of miles. It didn't come on the back of a door in a leaking dinghy with two children under my arm. I take my hat off to these people, and I believe in the free movement of people, and I hope that they do well. But many of them don't want to be where they're being put or where they're escaping to. They're landing there with fear. They've heard the propaganda in their country. They do not understand what's going on where they are. They live in fear. And also, on the other flip side, where they're arriving, those people live in fear as well because of the amounts that are coming in. That's the problem we have in the world at the moment. And that has been a socialist, left-wing world, new world order. And when you said it goes back to Bush, well, we've had 8 years of Clinton, we've had 8 years of 12 years of Blair, we've had 8 years of Obama. So I don't think you can go back to Bush. I think you have to blame them all. And I don't care what party they're from, they're singing off the same hymn sheet. They are, all of them, elite socialists.
Peter, so, thanks for your call in, as always.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Listening to the Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel. We're discussing the issues of the day. Live in the studio with me are Michael Senker and Grace Salt. And on the line in Miami is Nathan Thomas. We've got a caller on the line. 952-784-4000 is the number. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, sorry. It's just a query, actually. You probably had it before on board stiff. Are you having transmission problems?
We have a bit of a problem at the moment. I think it's the downpours we're having at the moment on the costas. That's why, John. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. In Los Peliches, there's nothing.
Well, there's lots in Los Peliches, John. You know, nothing. It's a vibrant area, my friend. But if you want to say there's nothing in them, then be on your own head, John. But yes, we have a small problem.
No problem.
Listen online at talkradioeurope.com. You can listen to us via the website. Yeah.
Yeah, the website doesn't work either, but it doesn't.
Well, that's what you call a double whammy then in that case. I'm sure
Sharon is missing me a hell of a lot.
I can there'll be a card going, there'll be a telegram going your way very, very soon indeed. John, thanks for the call there. Into the last 5 minutes or so of the show, just coming through as well that employers are entitled to ban workers from the visible wearing of any political, philosophical or religious sign, including headscarves. Europe's top court has ruled just now the ban must be erased on internal company rules requiring all employees to, quote, dress neutrally, unquote. I don't know what that means, says the European Court of Justice. It cannot be based on the wishes of a customer. It's the court's first decision on the issue of Islamic headscarves at work. Panel, any thoughts on that? I'll just get to you first, Nathan, over in the States. Any thoughts on what, you know, you should not be able to wear religious symbols, especially headscarves?
Well, again, if it's especially headscarves, then you're going to get a lot of argument that it's discrimination. If it is any religious symbol, that's something else. I mean, it's a shame, really, that I think, you know, courts have to get involved in this, but they are. It is that kind of world that we live in now. And
does that include that?
I don't know.
The yarmulke? Or, you
know. Well, that's the thing.
Where does it stop? I mean,
any political, philosophical, or religious sign. So presumably, if you go wearing a, you know, Jesus Saves T-shirt, I would imagine that would probably put you up against it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is it. Sorry, Nathan, this is a mad ruling. This is like Banana Gate, because so you got let's just say you got a Muslim woman who's at work. She's always wore a headscarf. I'm not talking about a burqa. I'm talking about a headscarf to work. Okay. It's been allowed. The company's employed her on that basis. And then they've got to get rid of her based on this judgment. If she refuses not to wear it, madness. Absolute madness.
Well, you know what's going to happen, don't you? I mean, everybody's going to turn up for work in headscarves. I mean, that's going to be...
Well, I would as a show of strength. I would wear a headscarf. If I worked with a girl who wore a headscarf for work... And they were going to get rid of it, I would turn up in my headscarf. In fact,
Michael's modelling
one. I'm doing it now.
Yes, indeed. You've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Bob Dunford again.
Yes, Bob.
Right, I'm just fed up the Daily Express. Right, I've sent you the email. You can read it if you like. And it said, conceded defeat. Dutch PM admits Geert Wilders will win the election in Holland.
I'm sorry, just say that again because I missed that bit.
The Daily Express today.
Yes.
Conceded defeat. Dutch PM admits Geert Wilders will win the election tomorrow.
Right then. Okay, so that's...
I'll send you the email.
I will look forward to reading that then in that case. Thank you very much for the call in there, the Daily Express there with its political coverage. Huge in Holland. And also, got another email because we're running out of time, in from on studio at talkradioeurope.com. I think a point that's been completely overlooked is the reason for immigration in the first place, i.e. if world powers... cut myself off there. If world powers stopped intervening in sovereign countries, then there would not be such a crisis. That's on the studio at talkradioeurope.com. Michael.
Well, I would just say, look who owns the Daily Express. Do you know who owns the Daily Express?
Desmond? Desmond. Yeah.
I mean, he's just... I mean, he's almost like Trumpisms. You know, he just makes stuff up as he goes along. I mean, his paper's just an absolute rag.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a national newspaper, and they're pointing to the result will be tomorrow in Holland. It can be very interesting over the next couple of, well, this month particularly, what with Brexit going ahead, and also tomorrow's vote in the Netherlands, and then we have the French election coming up. We've got time for just a very, very quick call, because we're almost out of time. Quickly, caller, you're live on TRE.
Very quickly... Daily Express, enough said. Thanks a lot. Cheers, bye.
There you go, Sharon.
Sharon agrees with me.
Right then. Almost out of time. Thank you very much for your calls in on a busy viewpoint. Again, the time has flown by. We'll be back next week, of course, with more current affairs. Thanks to my panel, of course, Nathan in Miami. Thanks for being with us at a very early time this morning, Nathan.
Always a pleasure.
And we managed to get through a whole viewpoint without talking about Donald Trump.
Yes, we did.
I'm sorry?
First in a long time.
I'm sure he'll make up for it. He'll do something over the week that we can get back to. But thanks. You can go back and enjoy the rest of your day. Hope your cold gets better, Nathan.
Thank you.
And, of course, joining me live in the studio today have been the excellent, as always, Mr. Michael Senker. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Looking very fetching in the headscarf. And first time and a memorable debut for Gray. So, Gray, thank you very much for coming in and your points today.
Thanks for having me. Cheers, Giles.
No problem at all. This has been Viewpoints on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. You can listen to this show again at 6 o'clock this evening. But stay tuned, because Steve Ritson is up next with Europe Today.
Views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe SL.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.